How would you describe a good world? Welcome to The Good Word. This week we begin a new series on The Good Word, and this time it is on the book of Genesis. I am Mathilde Frey, professor of Old Testament at Walla Walla University in the School of Theology. I am your host and study guide author. Our topic for this first week is creation. My conversation partners are Jody Washburn, professor of Old Testament in the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Alden Thompson, emeritus professor of Old Testament from the Walla Walla University School of Theology as well. How would you describe a good world?
You know, when you say that, given our world, I think immediately of Isaiah's vision in Isaiah 11. The wolf shall live with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with a kid. Calf and the lion fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. That's my vision of a good world.
That's a beautiful description, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. In a time where we all try to live through imagination, because our days are so filled with things and news that do not have this way of looking at the world anymore. Well, in the biblical story of creation in Genesis 1 and 2, we have two visions of this created world created by God. How do you think, what do you make of those two different versions of the creation story?
I love how it gives a complete, a more complete picture. Like, for instance, the on the ground, the forming, touching, grounded presence, being right there. You know, I love the picture of God, like, cupping the clay form in his hand and breathing, you know? Yeah. And then the majesty of creation. I mean, it's a beautiful pairing. And it reminds me of, I mean, you ask, what do we make of this? Or like, what's the significance of having these side by side? And it makes me think of William Brown. He talks about how do we understand the purpose of the Bible text, right? That's been used by communities of faith for thousands of years. And he says, the purpose of reading this text is to cultivate a sense of wonder about God, the world, others, and ourselves. And in the juxtaposition of the two narratives, you have this invitation to cultivate a sense of wonder about the wider world and also cultivate a relational sense of wonder about the other people near you, your own self, your growing sense of self, and also your relationship to the divine.
What I find so intriguing is that you have, one is hands-off, and the other one is hands-on. And I think it's, if you had one without the other, it would, you can't really blend them. Typically, we blend them together, but then that destroys the impact that you get. So you need to see them separately before you put them together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the one hands-off, that's the one from chapter one.
That's right.
And that is the one that is so perfectly ordered and structured with the 6 days, with the seventh day at the end, all those very perfect ways of telling it with those formulas that come from one day to another all the time, like God saw and God made, and there was evening and there was morning, and the day, the number of the day at the end. And then the one that I find so so very important, God saw it was good.
And at the end he says it was very good.
Yes. The goodness of creation. Yeah. How are we able to like retain that and also cultivate that aspect? Even in a world that is filled with sorrow, and yet there is goodness.
Well, one thing it helps me is to see this whole creation account in contrast with the pagan creation accounts, where everything in the biblical account is positive, is good, Whereas in the other creation accounts that you get in the ancient Near East, it's a battle of the chaos monsters.
Mm-hmm. They fight, and there is loss of the deity's life. Deities die in those stories. And there are numerous stories like that. And so the biblical writer comes along and knows about those stories and reads them and has his vision of a different way of understanding the creation of this world. And he gives us that vision in that context of that ancient belief of polytheistic deities, a heaven with many gods, or even an earth with many gods, because in the ancient world the gods are not that much different than people. People in their destructive ways, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, the other interesting thing is, and I think it was Gerhard Hausel, Old Testament scholar at Andrews, now deceased, who wrote an article which is really quite convincing that the creation account, especially Genesis 1, is polemic against those other accounts in simple little ways. For instance, the Hebrew word for sun, Shemesh Shamash, is a name of a pagan deity. But Genesis doesn't say that. It says the greater light and the lesser light.
Yes, yes. That is always so interesting. And then when you take it to the moon as well, the moon, Jerash, right? That's the word. And in the language and in the understanding of that, that relates to the city of Jericho. The city of Jericho is the city that worships the moon god. And so the Genesis 1 story in the Bible makes sure to not even use that word, so that no one would even think that we deal here with a deity. But we speak of a greater light, a lesser light, and they are God's creations, and they are given for a specific task. They have a function to fulfill in this world, to be light for the day and light for the night, and so on, right? Yeah. What do we make with the Sabbath at the end? Why is that so important at the end, and how does that lead us into the second story?
Well, it's the one place where God blesses a particular day. And I think that's important today when many people worship on Sunday. How can you bless a day that God has not blessed? See? But in the biblical account, God clearly blesses the seventh day, rests on that day, and hallows it. But there's no command to keep it there. It's just blessed.
So can we see it maybe like an invitation from God to the created world, to be with God, to be in God's presence, because God is clearly present, because the day is holy.
Yeah.
And God is the one who is the holiness of it. Mm-hmm. Actually, I like the German theologian Karl Barth, who wrote about Sabbath in the creation story and described it as God entering into the world. This is kind of like the doorway, the gate, where God now comes with full presence and becomes the Lord of the created world.
And Abraham Joshua Heschel talks about sanctuary in time.
Yeah.
So you have some pretty exalted stuff there.
Mm-hmm. What about Genesis 2 with the creation in the Garden of Eden?
Well, here you have hands-on. And like Jody was saying, God gets down there in the mud and the muck.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's no ordering as there is in Genesis 1. It's not chronologically ordered.
Yeah.
And I think it's particularly interesting when God gets around to creating Eve. Calls Adam to name the animals. And when he gets through with it, he says, "Hey, where's my partner?" And so God puts him to sleep. And in the study guide, Matilda, you had a special word for that instead of taking a rib. How did you put that?
Well, the word that is used there is actually not a rib, it's a side. That is what the word is translated in always, in all the other places in the Hebrew Bible. And the even more interesting to me about that is every time when there is a side, it is a side that is involved with a building, but it's not just any building, it's God's house.
Huh. Wow.
There is always a site, for example, in the building of the tabernacle in the desert. So the tabernacle itself on the site is described to be this tall and wide, and the materials that are used. The Ark of the Covenant has a tselah, a side. The table where they put the showbread, the altar, all of them. And then later, in the building of the temple, Solomon's temple, again, the same word is used. And for in the third group, the word is used when it's about the temple that the prophet Ezekiel sees in a vision. Mm-hmm. And again, there is that side all the time.
So what would you make of that then when applied to Eve as the helpmate?
Yeah, yes. So I was surprised to find, for example, two times Paul using that concept and saying, don't you know that your body is the temple of God and the temple of the Holy Spirit? And that is where I recognize God actually bringing that imagery of the side that is used in Genesis 2 now into the full meaning in a human's life. And this is first mentioned in Genesis in relation to the woman, but pay attention, it's the side that is taken from Adam, man, mm-hmm. the earthling. Uh-huh. So it's not the woman alone who is to be representative of some exceptional thing, but it is every human being included here. And so all of us are to be that place for God to dwell.
And the creation account ends with no bad news whatsoever. They were naked, but they were not ashamed. Right. The bad news waits until the next chapter.
Yes, yes.
And in the meantime, we can have wonder when we look at each other, right? As bearers of the image of God, as places where God chooses to dwell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love Brown's book that you mentioned, Jody, Sense of Wonder, and one other one that he wrote where he expands on these texts. So many thanks to my conversation partners today, Jody Washburn and Alden Thompson, also to our program engineer, Lindsay Gisbert, and to all of you who are listening in today. For The Good Word, I am Matilda Fry.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.